Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Pastor Cole, and I just wanted to personally thank you for tuning in to our message of the week. We pray that this message encourages you, it inspires you, and it builds your faith in Jesus. We love you, and we hope to see you in person at one of our services soon.
Genesis chapter 23 will be where we land this morning. I have a bit of a, I don't have two sides of the whiteboard like I typically do. We just got one side today. And it's because we are concluding movement two of Genesis. So I want to really sink this message home today. We've been in a series in Genesis. We're walking through every major story in the book of Genesis. We're at the end of movement two. Abraham and Sarah are about to die. And we're going to talk about what that means. And we're going to talk about all the fun stuff today. And so if you would, go with me to Genesis 23. I'm going to read a couple verses from Genesis 23. I'm going to flip to Genesis 24, and then we're going to go to Genesis 25. I need you to see this. Go with me here. Like a three-part series, like a Netflix special that has three shows, and they all go together, but there's one of them that is the most important, but it has a particular start, it has a particular end, but in the middle is where it gets real good. And so I need you to see this like that today. Genesis 23, starting in verse 1. When Sarah was 127 years old, she died at Kiriath Arba, now called Hebron, in the land of Canaan. There, Abraham mourned and wept for her. There, Abraham mourned and wept for her. Sarah died, and Abraham mourned and wept for her. Then Abraham buried his wife Sarah there in Canaan. Abraham buries Sarah in Canaan, in the cave of Machpelah near Mamre, called Hebron. So the fields and the cave were transferred from the Hittites to Abraham for use, check this out, as a permanent burial space. So Abraham starts his life with, I want you to set out on this journey to Canaan. Sarah dies in Canaan. And then the first thing that Abraham does was buy a cave in Canaan to be sure that that would be a burial place for him and his family. Okay, Genesis 24. Abraham was now a very old man, and the Lord had blessed him in every way. One day, Abraham said to his oldest servants, the man in charge of his household, take an oath by putting your hand under my thigh. Swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and earth, that you will not allow my son to marry one of these local Canaanite women. Go instead to my homeland, to my relatives, and find a wife there for my son Isaac. The servant asked, but what if I can't find a young woman who is willing to travel so far from home? Should I then take Isaac there to live among your relatives in the land that you came from? No, Abraham responded. Be careful. Never take my son there. For the Lord, the God of heaven, who took me from my father's house and my native land, solemnly promised to give this land to my descendants. He will send his angel ahead of you, and he will see to it that you find a wife there for my son. If she's unwilling to come back with you, then you are set free from this oath of mine. But under no circumstances are you to take my son there. So the servant took an oath by putting his hand under the thigh of his master, Abraham. His master, Abraham, swore to follow Abraham's instructions. And then he loaded Abraham's camels. Everybody say camels. He loaded Abraham's camels with all kinds of expensive gifts from his master. And he traveled to a distant Aram Naharam. I've been listening to that one, so I got it pronounced right. This Old Testament stuff, man, it just gets me. It's like, I shouldn't be having to go on here to the Bible app and listen to my British lady friend tell me how to pronounce all of these things. But I did for 20 minutes in the office this morning because I knew if I get up here with that, it's going to be real bad. There he went to the town where Abraham's brother Nahor had settled. He made the camels kneel beside a well outside the town. It was evening and the women were coming out to draw water. "O Lord, my master Abraham," he prayed, "please give me success today. Show unfailing love to my master Abraham. See, I am standing here beside this spring, and the young women of the town are coming out to draw water. This is my request. I will ask one of them, 'Please give me a drink from your jug.' If she says, 'Yes, have a drink,' I will water your camels too. Let her be the one that you've selected as Isaac's wife. This is how I will know that you've shown unfailing love to my master." Before he had finished praying, he saw a young woman named Rebecca coming out with a water jug on her shoulder. She was the daughter of Bethuel, who was the son of Abraham's brother Nahor and his wife Milcah. Rebecca was a very beautiful woman, old enough to be married, but she was still a virgin. She went down to the spring, filled her jug, and came back. Running over to her, the servant said, "Please give me a drink from your water jug." "Yes, my lord," she answered, "have a drink." And she quickly lowered her jug from her shoulder and gave him a drink. And when she had given him a drink, she said, "I'll draw water for your camels too. I'll draw water for your camels too until they have had enough to drink. I'll draw water for your camels too until they have had enough to drink." So she quickly emptied her jug into the watering and ran back to the well to draw water for all of his camels. The servant watched her in silence, wondering whether or not the Lord had given him success in his mission. The servant watched her in silence. Another translation said, it says, the servant paid close attention to watch what Rebecca was doing. Then at last, when the camels had finished drinking, he took out a gold ring for her nose, two large bracelets for her wrist, and asked, "Whose daughter are you? Please tell me, would your father have any room to put us up for the night?" And she says, "I am the daughter of Bethuel." She replied, "My grandparents are Nahor and Malkah. Yes, we have plenty of straw and feed for the camels, and we have room for the guest." The rest of the chapter is talking about Rebecca's family giving her to Abraham's servant, which would have been his best friend, so that she can go back and marry Isaac. That's just where we're at. Genesis 25, I'm going to read this last thing, and we're going to preach for a second, tie it all together, and then send you on your way. Abraham lived for 175 years, and he died at a ripe old age. This is Genesis 25. Abraham lived for 175 years, and he died at a ripe old age. Having lived a long and satisfying life, he breathed his last and joined his ancestors in death. Sorry, they don't have the words back there. It's all good. His son Isaac and Ishmael buried him in the cave of Machpelah near Mamre in the field of Ephron, the son of Zohar the Hittite. This was the field that Abraham had purchased from the Hittites and where he had buried his wife Sarah. After Abraham's death, God blessed his son Isaac, who settled near Beer Laharoi. It's almost right. In the Negev. If I was doing the typical teaching this morning, I would talk to you about how at the end of Abraham's life, his son settles under a bunch of trees in a forest. And so if you've been here for any of the series at all, that kind of makes sense. Jake, you're good this morning. Everybody give it up for Jake. I'm going to read something to you this morning. Genesis, the first book in our Bible, opens with a series of tragedies. Adam and Eve are exiled from the garden, and then, east of Eden, Cain murders his brother Abel and is sent by God into exile. Strikingly, at no point is any mention made of grief or mourning. Abel's blood cries out from the ground, but Abel's parents, the human beings who have been made from the ground, do not raise their voice at all. Later, we're given an account of Adam's family line, and again, there's not a word about grieving. The book of Chronicles, death after death after death, without any indication of either joy or sorrow. It's not until Sarah, Abraham's wife, dies that mourning occurs. And this is how the scriptures teach us that we must learn to sorrow. Pain comes naturally, but mourning and grief is holy, and it requires wisdom and courage. John Claypool, an Episcopal priest, lost his 10-year-old daughter, Laura Lou, to leukemia. In the years that followed, he spoke often about how he was able to make peace with what happened, not by just the unquestioning resignation to this must be the will of God, but by learning to be grateful for his daughter's life, for the memories they shared. And in his own words, if we are willing, the experience of grief can deepen and widen our ability to participate in life. We can become more grateful for the gifts that we have and that we have been given. More open-handed in our handling of the events of life, more sensitive to this whole mysterious process, which is life. We can trust this wisdom. It's been proven time and time again in different times throughout Christian history. If we continue to show up, to practice openness of heart, staying present to pain, allowing sorrow to shelter in us, then we will be doing what needs to be done for ourselves, for one another, and for the people who are dying. And make no mistake, how we respond to death matters. St. Paul, in one of his letters, distinguishes godly sorrow from worldly sorrow, good grief from bad grief. Worldly sorrow, he says, it leads to despair and dread, and it leaves us numb and bitter. But godly sorrow, good grief, sobers us. It awakens us to life. It affords us the readiness not only to face the reality, but to embrace it. Good grief, wise sorrowing, is paradoxically life-giving. This is the sorrow that we see in Jesus as he weeps at the tomb of his friend Lazarus. And might I add, this is also the kind of grieving and sorrow that we see in Abraham when he buries his wife Sarah. In the words of the famous Karl Rahner, all those who weep, weep the tears of Jesus. In the story that I read this morning, we have what we know is kind of the father of our faith. And everything that maybe you've ever been taught about Abraham has been, you've been taught about how great his faith is and how powerful of a man of God he is and all of that good stuff, which is true, I guess. But if you've been paying attention at all over the past several weeks, you will know that Abraham did not always get it right. Like, in fact, most of his life he got really wrong. Most of his life he made these horrible mistakes. And we've learned over the course of Movement 2 in Genesis that what made Abraham Abraham was not that he had just this unwavering faith, but that it was that he kept showing up in spite of failure, in spite of circumstances. And as he kept showing up, what we see is God is faithful to meet him. That's the entire story of the Bible, is that we screw it up royally and God is faithful to meet us. But when we think about Abraham in this light, in the fact that he is the father of our faith, we can see that not only is he sometimes full of faith and sometimes does he have doubt, but we can understand that now that grief is not a result of Abraham's doubt. Grief is a result of Abraham's faith, because it takes great faith to grieve. It takes great faith to go through the process of grief. We, in our worlds, have been taught, 100% how not to grieve. Nobody knows how to grieve in our worlds. And there's a whole sermon that I preached on how maybe we should go about grieving. Me and Emily wrote that sermon together. So if you want to go look at it, it's on our YouTube channel. And it's just called Good Grief and the way that we should grieve, all of that good stuff. But these stories are not put beside each other for no reason. These stories are not set up like this just because. On the timeline that we have been in Genesis, the sacred timeline, some would say, St. Thomas, we start with Abraham and Sarah being in Haran, which is where Abraham has already grieved the loss of his brother. God calls him out of this land and sends him on this journey, all of those sermons are online, towards Canaan. Now, this whole time, I'm going to move this now because that's the only thing I needed that for. It's going to be distracting the rest of the time. Abraham leaves the land that he had known, and he starts walking towards Canaan. This whole time during this series, we've defined Canaan as kind of this place that God wants to get us to in our hearts and in our souls to make us whole. So Abraham leaves his homeland, and he starts walking towards wholeness. And as he starts walking towards wholeness, he screws this up a lot. A lot. He makes a lot of mistakes. And God continues to be faithful to him. But when Sarah dies, something happens to Abraham. There's something that changes in Abraham based off of the things that he does next. Because grief will change you. Death will change you. Grief will give you perspective that you never had before. Death will give you perspective that you never had before. And I think that what we can see here when we're reading the story about Abraham and Sarah dying, it hits him when Sarah dies. If she's going to die, I'm going to die. If she's going to die, I'm going to die. And he is grieved by Sarah's death. And what he does immediately after that is so unbelievably profound. And it makes so much sense that Abraham would do this. Because we've seen God show up to Abraham and promise over and over and over again, I'm not just going to take you to the land of Canaan. I'm going to make sure that your descendants live in this land too. I'm not just going to make you whole if you leave this land, if you leave these things that are messing with your soul. I'm going to be sure that your descendants are also whole too. So if you take this risk of faith, I'm going to be sure that you're not just blessed, but everybody around you is blessed. And he gets this revelation as Sarah's dying. What about Isaac? Because the promise was not just to Abraham. It was to Abraham's children and their children. And this point of grief makes him turn his mind to his son. And he says, if we are going to continue on this journey, if God is going to continue to use my family on this journey to make the entire world whole, I have to be sure that whoever Isaac marries is the right person. And so what does he do? What does he do? I don't think it's by coincidence that he kind of sets out on this journey to find Isaac a wife, because I don't believe that God wastes any season of grief. I believe when we grieve and when we're hurting and when we're in pain, I don't believe that God wastes any of that. I believe that he uses all of it. And he used it, I think, in this story to turn his attention towards Isaac. But here is something so important. When you read the story, Abraham does not go find Isaac a wife. He looks to what would have been his closest friend. And he says, I need your help. I can't do this. But you know me better than anybody. I need you to go to where I'm from and find someone who's cut from the same cloth as Sarah. Because I can't bear even being around people like Sarah anymore. It hurts too deeply. The pain is too great for me to go have to go find someone who reminds me of my wife that I just buried. So I need you to go do it for me. If the father of our faith, Abraham, asked for help in his season of grief and despair, maybe you should consider that too. If the dude that God picked to bless the whole world through looked at his friends when he was going through some stuff and he said, I need your help, maybe you should consider asking for help sometimes, especially when you're going through stuff. Do you know why we made all of these changes at our church? So you can say, I need your help. I need your help. And what does his friend go and do? It was the chief servant of Abraham's house. He was over 318 people. He knew what Abraham wanted. He had been around Abraham and Sarah. And he knew what it would take to continue this family journey into wholeness. And so he sends him. And when he sends him, his friend is like, are you sure? Like, don't you want to go do this? And he's like, no, I'm not going back. And don't you take Isaac there either. You go find the person he's supposed to marry, and you bring her back here. And notice, he goes back to where he left from in the beginning to find Isaac a wife. Because the people of God are just cut from a particular type of cloth. We're just made in a particular type of way. And he knew, if God is going to use my family to move the entire world into wholeness, whoever Isaac connects himself to will be the most important decision that I've ever had a say in. And so what happens? He looks at his best friend. He says, hey, I want you to go find Isaac a wife. His best friend says, all right, I'll do it. And on his way there, he makes this absolutely unreasonable request. He says, when I get there, the woman that I'll be looking for, I'm going to ask her for a drink of water. But also, I have these 10 camels. And she's going to water those camels too. And everybody said, amen. The husband's in the room. I'm joking. Don't look to your right or left right now. It's okay. Don't do that. He makes this unreasonable request. And as he's praying to God, there has to be a woman that's going to come along, and she's going to give me water, and she's going to take care of my camels too. Rebecca comes running up from this cistern, this well. And she says, would you like a drink of water? He's like, yeah, I would. And she's like, oh, well, since you're here with all these camels, I'll water your camels too. I'll water your camels too. The commitment that she was making by doing this is one of the most outlandish commitments that we see in all of the text, because Rebecca would have had to go down into these cisterns over at least 100 times. And if you want to Google what this looks like, it's not like an easy journey down in there. This isn't like walking out back and cutting on the water hose. It's like, hey, bring the camels. Line them up. We got to water them. It's like, no, she has a jug, and she has to walk hundreds of feet down into this cave, fill up her water jugs, and bring them back to water each camel. And this is what the text says. Abraham's servant watched her closely. He paid attention to see if she was going to do what she said that she was going to do. Because he knew if Isaac connects himself to the wrong person, this journey won't continue. He needed somebody cut from the same cloth that Abraham was cut from in this land where God speaks to Abraham and he says, I want you to leave everything and everybody, and I want you to go to a land where you don't know what's going to happen. And Abraham uproots his life and he leaves. And when Rebecca gets there on the scene to meet his friend, she says, I will go above and I'll go beyond the rest of these people. And let me just tell you something about God. God uses those people. God looks at those people, and he sees those type of people, the people who are willing to walk down into a cistern over 100 times just to be sure that your camels are watered. He uses those people. He takes those people and connects them to people to help the whole world come into wholeness. Listen, be careful who you connect yourself to. Be careful who you connect yourself to. Just sit with that for a second. Be careful who you connect yourself to. Who you connect yourself to is the most important thing about your life. The people that you are connected to is more important than anything in the world that you can list. It's more important than money. It's more important than a job. It's more important than social status. It's more important than anything. Just list something there. Because when all hell is breaking loose in your life, You're going to need people cut from a particular type of cloth in those seasons. When the world is spiraling into chaos, you need a particular type of person to come and sit with you. And God is looking for a particular type of person when he's looking for Isaac a wife. Abraham knows what type of wife it's going to take. In the text later, it says this. It says that Rebekah actually comforts Isaac because it reminded him of Sarah. Who you connect yourself to is the most important thing that you about you. Who you marry is the most important decision that you will ever make in your life outside of deciding to follow Jesus. Who you marry, let me just give you some advice real quick. Don't marry flaky people. Don't marry potential. Everybody's got potential. I've heard it so many times it makes my head, I just want to take my head up to where I was like, okay, it's awesome. Can they show up to a job every single day on time? Can they pay their own bills? Like, can they just do normal stuff? I got some of y'all with that on time stuff, didn't I? I'm serious. Yeah. Kelby's like, first two, I'm good. I'm good on the first two. Last one, I'm out. When you get ready to marry someone, you should be asking like really hard questions. Like really hard questions. Don't lower your standards for marriage. Don't do that. Don't lower your standards for marriage. Don't compromise on who you are to marry someone who you think can potentially become like you. That's not going to happen. Let me just give you some advice. You're not going to fix anyone. You ain't God. You can't fix it. There's people in this room who've been married for years and years and years and years, and they ain't fixed each other yet. Wesley Francis shaking his head back there. Gene's been trying to fix him for a long time. For a long time. Listen, who you connect to matters. Do not connect to flaky people. Connect to people who do what they say that they're going to do every single time. You know, one of my core, like, things here, you can ask the staff here, one of the things that drives me nuts, will drive me onto medication of some sort. If we say that we are going to do something as a church and we don't do it, I have a panic attack. Because I'm so committed to just being a faithful person. This event that we may do, it might be horrible, but we did it because we said we were going to do it. We did it. You may have hated it, and if you hated it, that's good news. You get to sign up to lead the next one.
Amen. Come on,
we're a growing church. So step up to the plate, big dog. Everybody knows my policy. If you complain to me, you're the chief volunteer. Or don't complain.
Yep.
Who you connect with matters. Listen, are you a person? And do you have people in your life that you can call when things are going south quick? When things are going south quick, are you a person that can be called upon? Do you like respond to text and phone calls? This is just etiquette in 2024. Like, if someone texts you with a problem, respond to it. If someone calls you, call them back. This is important stuff. People text me all the time, and I'll send them a text back. I need time to think about this. I'm going to have to hit you tomorrow. And then I set a reminder on my phone. Don't connect yourself to flaky people. Who Isaac married made all the difference in the world. When we get into movement three, you are going to see that Isaac and Rebekah begin to get things right that Abraham and Sarah got wrong. I mean, in the very next chapter, Isaac and Rebekah have a dealing with Abimelech. Abraham deceived him. And I'm going to tell you what Isaac does in a couple weeks. Who you connect yourself to is the most important thing about your life. Connecting yourself to faithful people who are committed just to showing up and doing what they say that they're going to do when they say that they're going to do it makes all the difference in the world. When I look for people that I want to connect myself to, I can't. I'm allergic to flaky. I can't do it. When people are flaky, I can't do it. God bless you. And if you're suffering, let me know and I'll come suffer with you. But I don't need to be walking through the worst season of my life and can't get a hold of you. Who you connect to makes all the difference in the world. Abraham was not successful because he was perfect. He was successful just because he kept showing up. God didn't choose Abraham because he got it right all the time and that he had everything together and that everything was just going right and working right all the time, 24/7 days, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That was not a thing. Abraham failed over and over and over and over and over again. And what made Abraham different was that he kept showing up. And what you will see that makes Isaac and Rebekah different later is that, yeah, they're going to fail too. Surprise, shocker. They're going to blow it too, but they just keep showing up. You know what holiness is? Holiness is not you being perfect. Get that out of your mind. None of you or me or anyone in this room is perfect. I don't want to project that to people, even as a church. I don't want people to look at Resting Place Church and go, oh, they're perfect. I want people to look at Resting Place Church and say, you know what? They're faithful. They do what they say they're going to do when they say that they're going to do it. If you're walking through hell, they'll walk with you. If you're suffering, they'll come suffer with you. If things are not going well in your life, well, they're there right beside you. They're there with you. That's what I want people to say about this church. And that's why I'm so committed to caring more than I am growing. I'm more committed to caring than I am growing because at the end of the day, God is sending us people to this church. You are a part of that if you don't know that already. You are the part of the reason for that if you don't know that already. And our commitment as a staff at this church and as a church is that we will get in the dirt with you. We will suffer with you. We will walk through life with you. I promise you, I've heard all there is to hear about things. Heard a new story this week that caught me off guard, but not many do. Whatever you're walking through in your life, I'm not going to be shocked by it because it's not my responsibility to give you a reaction of what I think you're walking through or what I think about you're going through. It's just my responsibility to lock arms with you and grab your hand and say, let's just keep walking together. We're going to keep walking towards wholeness. We're going to keep walking this thing out. I don't know what this is going to look like, but these people at this church, at Resting Place Church, I want some of that God stuff in us that says we don't know how all this is going to work out, but we'll just keep walking. We'll just keep going forward. I can't give you an explanation. I don't know how. I can't give you all the answers that you want. I don't have explanations to you. But on this way to wholeness and us walking to wholeness the same way that Abraham and Sarah left their homeland and journeyed towards Canaan, the same way that Isaac and Rebekah will spend their lives trying to get settled in Canaan, my commitment to you as a pastor and as the lead pastor of this church is that is the type of people that we are going to be. We are going to lock arms with you and commit to walking you into a place of wholeness and getting you settled into a place of wholeness because we are a faithful people more than we are anything else. Are we perfect? No, I'm not. I'm not perfect. Almost took communion twice this morning, having a rough morning. We're not perfect. We're not going to have all the answers, but we can lock arms with you and walk. We can walk lock arms with you and walk. I can't do much, but I can show up. I can show up. And this story ends. Jansen, you can come on up. This story ends. And Abraham dies. And I want you to look at something here. Abraham is committed to walking out wholeness, walking out this thing in his life. And there was one other time in the scriptures that I think Abraham was close to grief and he was close to mourning, but he didn't. And if you remember, you can stand to your feet with me all over the room. If you'll remember, and I really need you to lock in this moment. Just lock in right now. If you'll remember, when Sarah tells Ishmael and Hagar to leave, Abraham is in pain because he has lost his son. And at the end of his life, when Abraham is being buried in wholeness, Isaac and Ishmael are burying him. Because when you're committed to walking out this thing, when you're committed to walking in wholeness, God will take things that in a previous season look like failures, and they'll serve you in seasons where you need them to. It's no coincidence that Ishmael is there too. It's Ishmael and Isaac burying Abraham. It's not just Isaac. It's both of them. Because when you are whole, things that threaten you won't threaten you anymore. Things that are a threat to your promises when you're whole aren't threats anymore. They're just there to help be a part of it. So how are we bound by laughter? That's been the title of Movement 2. How are we bound by laughter? We die in wholeness. I have like news for everyone in the room. You're gonna die. And I'm not one of those preachers that's like, you better come down to the altar and get your life with Jesus right now because you could die on your way home. I don't even believe in that. But you are going to die. And where you die and who you die with will be what marks you. And it will be what marks your family for years and years and years to come. Abraham thought he blew it with Ishmael. And God knew all along that Ishmael would be there, helping bury his father. And so as we look forward into the future, into how God's going to continue this journey that started in grief with Abraham leaving his home, headed towards Canaan, it ends with his son, who is named Laughter, and Abraham, Isaac is holding Abraham the same way that Sarah held Isaac. Isaac, whose name is Laughter, is now holding a man who's grieving and who has died. And the only way that happens is if you're willing to take the risk to walk towards wholeness. That's the only way that happens. The only way that you can die laughing is when you look out and you see, I've made sure they're taken care of. I've done everything in my ability to make sure that this journey towards wholeness for the entire world, that's going to keep going. And so I want to pray for you this morning. And I want to pray that you have an understanding that these three episodes of Sarah dying and Abraham grieving sets up Abraham leaning into the relationships around him to find his son a wife that would continue this journey into wholeness for the whole world. And Abraham then ends his life being held by laughter because he knew that he had did everything that God had asked him to do. He bought his family a burial place in Canaan. God told Abraham, go to Canaan. And Abraham says, I can do that. I can do that. And I can also make sure that we never leave. Because not only am I going to die in wholeness, but I'm going to be buried in wholeness. And I'm going to be buried by the people who will continue to bless the whole world. And they'll be able to laugh too. They'll be able to laugh. And so we've come to an end of the life of Abraham and the life of Sarah. And we're going to pick up in Rebekah and Isaac. We're going to get into Jacob and Esau and all types of fun stuff there. Then we're going to conclude with Joseph, Genesis. So I think we have about 12 more weeks in Genesis. And then I'm going to preach through Revelation. And so that's going to be fun. Revelation is all about Jesus. It's not about weird end time stuff. It's all about Jesus. But I want to pray for you this morning. If you would, bow your head with me all over the room. And just receive this morning. Father, we thank you that we are blessed.